So from the ivory towers of Dartmouth College in New Hampshire, it wasn't exactly collegiate-level debate, but neither was it the flying dirt clods of Ivy League rugby. The GOP candidates, well, eight of them anyway, were back in action last night. Here are some highlights. Mitt Romney sounded confident. After all, he had a good week.
You have to stand by your principles. At the same time, you know that good Democrats and good Republicans who love the country first will be able to find common ground from time to time and recognize we can't keep on spending like we're spending. We can't demand more from tax revenue from people because that kills jobs and hurts working families.
Romney talked about unemployment, Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke's unemployment.
I wouldn't keep Ben Bernanke in office. I'd choose someone of my own.
And who might
interest.
That be?
Well, I haven't chosen that person. I haven't even chosen a vice president. I'm not sure I'm the nominee yet.
Well, so we'd like that.
But candidate Herman Cain, meanwhile, is sure he's on a roll.
They want to pass what they think they can get passed rather than what we need, which is a bold solution. 999 is bold, and the American people want a bold solution, not just what's going to kick the can down the table. Down the road.
John Huntsman found an opening once Cain's 999 plan was mentioned.
When you mention a flat tax, does that mean that you look with some favor upon 999 that Herman Cain mentioned at the beginning of this conversation?
I think it's a catchy phrase. In fact, I thought it was the price of a pizza when I first heard about it.
Herman Cain, of course, a partner in the Godfather's pizza business. For Michelle Bachmann, though, apparently an expert on Satanism and the occult, the 999 plan was more like the mark of the beast.
When you take the 999 plan and you turn it upside down, I think the devil's in the details.
Get it? She had more substantive comments to make about the Dodd-Frank financial reform law.
Dodd-Frank institutionalized all of these problems that were put into effect by the federal government. That's why I introduced the bill to repeal Dodd-Frank. It's the Jobs and Housing Destruction Act.
Through the debate, Rick Perry emphasized opening up energy exploration in the U.S. That was kind of his theme. Rick Santorum blamed rising poverty rates on a breakdown in family values in the United States. And Ron Paul called for an independent audit of the Federal Reserve. And in one of the more thoughtful moments of the debate, Newt Gingrich had this to say about those anti-Wall Street protesters.
Virtually every American has a reason to be angry. I think virtually every American has a reason to be worried. I think the people who are protesting on Wall Street break into two groups. One is left-wing agitators who would be happy to show up next week on any other topic. And the other is sincere middle-class people who, frankly, are very close to the Tea Party people in actually caring.
The backdrop of that debate up in New Hampshire, though, was on Capitol Hill. It was Obama's $447 billion jobs bill struck down in the Senate last night, barring it from further consideration. 48 Republicans and 2 Democrats joined the majority in killing it. We're going to look at all of this now with Todd Zwillick, Takeaway Washington correspondent, and Ron Christie, Republican political strategist, CEO of Christie Strategies, and former special assistant to President George W. Bush. Ron and Todd, good morning.
Good morning, John.
So let's start with the jobs bill. Is it really dead now? That's the end of it?
John, we always knew it was dead. Chuck Schumer always knew it was dead. Listen to him, and then we'll come back and explain why. It may not be policy, but it's certainly politics. Listen to Schumer.
We knew that they were going to block the bill, okay? And we know we have to go to the people. This will be an ongoing fight until our Republican friends see that we have to do something about jobs. And they will see it.
Although, Todd Zwillick, I may be reading your colleague Ron Christie's mind here. It wasn't just the Republicans that blocked it. 2 Democrats voted against it.
True, true. Now, there was no majority that blocked it. This thing got 51 votes. It was 51 to 48, which is short of the 60 you need to proceed here. And 60 is the point. The jobs bill is dead as is, but as Schumer says, we know that. But did you hear that little lilt in his voice coming off the Senate floor last night? That's because now that they did get 51 votes, and it was never assured that they would, they only got it by bringing a senator back to Washington who was in Boston getting the New Englander of the Year award, by the way. That's Senator Shaheen from New Hampshire. 51 votes. Now the president has the ability to say the only thing standing between unemployed Americans and my jobs plan is a Republican filibuster. He will say that, I promise you. You'll be hearing it from the president. You'll be hearing from him that Republicans want to protect millionaires and billionaires and not teachers and firefighters. And when Schumer says that they're going to keep fighting and they're going to come back at this, Democrats' plan now, John, is to break this bill up into its most popular component parts: money for teachers and firefighters, payroll tax cut,
okay,
infrastructure bank.
Sounds like a legislative program, but also a campaign slogan as well. Ron Christie, what do you make of it?
Well, I think Todd's primarily correct here. I think it's very interesting that the president was not able to carry a significant number of moderates and those who are up for re-election in next year's cycle to vote for his jobs bill. You have John Tester from Montana who voted against it. You have Ben Nelson from Nebraska who voted against it. But look at all the number of people who've given the opportunity to vote on the significant package. I'm thinking Joe Manchin in West Virginia, Claire McCaskill from Missouri. There are a number of Democrats who would never, heading into a very tight re-election bid next year, vote for this package. So it's good optics for the president to campaign on. It's terrible legislating and terrible ability to find compromise with both sides of the aisle.
Todd, a reaction and then a takeaway from both of you on the GOP debate?
Well, on the jobs, well, I would say this. Look, the hard truth on this is that the president knew going in it would never pass. He only lost two of those moderates. A lot of the other ones voted for it. They weren't sure they were ever going to get them. It did show, I think, almost the opposite of what Ron thinks. It showed the president's ability on a divisive political issue to get a lot of people he didn't think that they would get. Seems like they think the president's coattails aren't as bad as everyone else seems to think in places like Missouri.
All right. Todd Zwillick, any comment on the GOP debate before we get Ron's view of the debate?
Yeah, sure. I thought Mitt Romney was very strong and Herman Cain was very strong. It was really Mitt Romney's to lose. He didn't stumble once. A remarkably flat and dormant Rick Perry.
Interesting.
Seemed almost uninterested at times. He got hammered by Time Magazine's Karen Tumulty, who was one of the moderators, on a energy investment program in the state of Texas that he presided over, which is strikingly like the program that supported Solyndra that Republicans are attacking. And Rick Perry was not able to effectively defend the fact that he liked it in Texas but didn't like it in Washington.
Right.
It's almost the exact same program. I was just struck by the marginalization of Perry.
That's Todd Zwillick. Ron Quisi, let's give you the last word here in the last minute.
Well, I think you can always tell who the front runners are in a early presidential campaign by looking at who gets the most time in the debates. And I think last night, Governor Romney and Herman Cain certainly took the majority of the questions, and they took a majority of the attacks from their opponents. So they both did very well last night. Governor Romney is looking more and more comfortable, more and more, frankly, presidential as he sits up there. I have to agree with Todd on this. This is something, John, that we talked about over a month ago. The Solyndra-like deal in Texas, the energy deal where one of the governor's supporters was given a very sweetheart-looking deal, looking a lot like Solyndra, Governor Perry was flat, couldn't defend it, and I think
his
numbers continue to go down.
All right, a yes or no question on the way out. Todd Zwillick, Ron Quisi, does 999 live after today, or does it die?
It lives as a rhetorical flourish because it's catchy, and Herman Cain he loves it, and people like to hear him say it. It'll never be law.
Ron Quisi, does 999 live?
It does, but enough already, John. It does.
Ron Quisi and Todd Zwillick, Takeaway Washington correspondent and CEO of Quisi Strategies, former special assistant to President George W. Bush. Thanks, guys.
Sure thing.
Take care.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.